So, just the two of us then. I don't know if you want to pick up where we left off. I don't know if you can remember where it was.
I don't remember. I don't know if I actually kind of I listened to a bunch of the podcast the other day at work, and so it's kind of shuffled my even memory of what I said, because I was I listened to the one with your cousin, which I really enjoyed, and a couple others. So the one I think it was number 13 with the shamanism and stuff like that. So it triggered a lot of thoughts. And so I didn't even really know.
Did you listen to the one, recent one with Mark Erman?
Yeah, I did. I did.
Because that seemed timely, because we were talking about the other side and the dead and.
I know it was. It was a little bit, it had a very, there's been so much, I think the whole, rock and roll world is hitting that kind of. They're hitting the cliff, they're all one by one jumping off the cliffs into another realm. So it's been hearing about people dying. It's been like a daily, it feels like a daily occurrence this winter.
Oh, really? So not just David Bowie then.
Yeah, exactly. But that one was good. And then the one where you did talk about David Bowie at length. So I feel like I've been enjoying your thoughts a bunch on a lot of different subjects. So it was a very, it was just, again, I didn't even remember what we talked about.
It was largely that, the spirit world and the
Yeah.
connection between music and self-expression or soul expression and the dead, and I
Exactly.
haven't listened back to it either,
Yeah.
but.
Yeah, so I think that as a starting point, that is, and it relates to, I mean, if you think the space in between is often, the doorway.
Yeah, the threshold
The
is the
threshold,
liminal, yeah.
yeah. Which, if that exists, if there's a doorway or just either or, but the contact of also of self-expression for me, I don't in terms of writing, I don't really think of it as self-expression at all.
Oh, you don't?
Not my own
So.
write. I'm not really interested in. It wouldn't interest me from to have my own self-expression. I kind of think of it as creating these vehicles that I would have, a lot of the songs I've been singing for, dozens of years. So for them to still interest me, it's almost like they transport me. Maybe not to, I haven't really thought where, but not maybe not the spirit world, but maybe they, the song itself is the doorway. So I'm engaged in that, or engaged in it, engage in it as a doorway, because it is never about what it's about, and it's, never been again. I've never felt all that comfortable with self-expression and in feeling like I had something to say.
So what would be the difference then? I mean, what would you right now you're would you call this self-expression? You're having a conversation, so presumably this is self-expression for you.
Yeah, I guess this would be, that's what we talked about last time, where I said that was the place I was least comfortable, because I don't feel like I have that much to say. And so I'm interested, I do enjoy conversations, and conversations lead, maybe they're at the end, they have, I never think the thing that is said with the words, like the words trigger something.
Yeah.
It's never, I feel like the place of the song is to trigger something, and not something that it knows what it's going to be, but just a trick, just to be that trigger.
Yeah. But do you have an experience of self-discovery through
Oh,
music?
self-discovery, exactly. Yes, of course.
So, and don't you think that the music is expressing that experience of self-discovery?
That, yeah, that would be fine with me. I mean, not that I have a say in it, but
So then it's,
that is an
yeah.
interesting thing, because I did have, I played a song for this other, singer. She, had her own band and stuff, and I played her music, and she, her comment was, "Oh, it sounds like you're learning how to sing as you go along." And so I took that as an interesting way to proceed to describe that it's just, it's, it maybe it is about the process. But it definitely is the process. Again, I don't know. I'm never clear what it's about.
Right. Well, I was just saying to my sister, the word amateur, actually French for lover, and so it's we don't ever want to, not lover as in the sexual sense, but one who loves. We don't ever want to lose that amateurness of the process or the experience of whatever it is that we're doing, because that seems to be where the real treasure is. So what I was getting from what you were saying there was that you don't see it as self-expression because you don't know what it is beforehand, only afterwards.
Right.
So hence it's self-discovery, but it is, that's how I see what I do anyway, is self-discovery through self-expression, because also I wouldn't, like, it wouldn't be self-expression if I knew it beforehand. It would just be repetition or something like that. It would just be a shtick, right? But on the other hand, I wouldn't discover these things if I didn't express them. Like, where would they be, you know?
Right. Yeah, I guess I try to always distance that kind of psychic distance between, like, the current idea of singer-songwriter who gets his in a bedroom and explains about love or something like that. So I guess it's different. So it's the mapping out, it's the kind of musical background to that self-discovery. To, mm-hmm. like, because I usually think of it as going kind of downward, inward and downward. And then I'm describing, not to say what you see, but at some point you get a voice. The voice comes, you feel like you have the voice to speak. And it doesn't seem like mine, but I guess it would be. You know, I never
to describe what you're discovering.
Yeah. But at that point, it doesn't feel mine so much. It feels more, I don't know if it's universal or less of that, further away from the head, like moving further towards either the body or the underworld.
The other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing that isn't the body.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's universal, but...
So do you see... the difference then between, like you're saying, when you're going down, is that when you start composing or whatever you would call that, mining, excavating a song, or does that happen beforehand that you're going down and then that somehow turns into a song or an excavation?
Yeah, the excavation, it's going, a lot of times I have the music or a lot of the parts of the music, and then by kind of repeating and playing the music, I guess the word part is the one that's the, you know, going downward. The music seems to just come from around, from outside. Mm-hmm. And then the song, it's like always kind of like then trying to figure out what the words and how it would comment on sound and comment on the music.
So my question was more that does it start as a desire to compose something or does it start without you knowing it?
It starts without me knowing it, and it moves towards a conclusion of finding out what it was, you know, that was calling. Almost, you know, like a ringing, like a, oh, there's a phone ringing, let's find out who this is.
That's a bit like David Lynch's thing with fishes. It reminds me of that, you know, he has that thing, he talks about fishing for ideas.
Uh-huh. That's, yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way, but,
Like there's a line out there, and then it starts to pull, and then you get drawn to whatever's on the other end of the line.
Yeah, I think because for me it's like I always tend to be having a guitar part to noodle around on, and then that draws a word. I might just get one word, you know, in a day's little sitting messing with it, and then the words kind of collect and see how they refer. One thing I left out was that in the process, I usually have a notebook full of notes from other reading or other words or phrases from reading books or whatever. And those I usually put to the side and then use those as kind of ways to anchor thoughts on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of been a process I think I made a real mess of trying to describe it, but the process is the, you know, the process is the thing that I do and enjoy, and then it has this outcome that you then are, you know, they're able to go and sing in a bar or wherever you take it, wherever you take the song.
So is there any like correlation or overlap between this process and you just being in a mood where you're drawn inward, like depression, for example?
Yeah, definitely. I guess that is depression. Definitely, that would be the more... I've kind of had to rethink that because it definitely, that's where it started, in an inward kind of depressed state. But, and that would always kind of keep, like, kind of almost like a little bit like a gravitational pull would kind of drag the music down a little bit. If I think of the more earlier stuff, it's definitely slower, more dragged down, a little more somber. I recently read a quote, I think it was Trungpa Rinpoche, is about experiencing sadness without actually being sad. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's been more where I'm trying to be now, where it's similar to being depressed, to sit there and kind of go downward with the ideas and in downward and inward, but it doesn't have to be. So I've kind of taken that as a note to see how that affects. To allow this, because I think that would give the subject matter more freedom. I guess that's what I thought.
If you went identified with it?
I think if you didn't identify with it so personally.
Right.
And that you could see it as, I just read, I had actually, speaking of notes, I had these notes and I've had them for years in this old, old notebook. And I was reading Rilke recently and found the source of it. And I had only taken the notes from, you know, someone making a reference and something else, and I had no idea who wrote the original thing. Mm-hmm. And it was where he kind of talks about, I think it's in the Duino Elegies, about falling, trying to find falling as a positive thing.
As in going down.
Yes, exactly. So right. Down, I mean, as they say, there's no up or down in space.
Right.
To try to kind of think of downward, inward is also expansive and positive.
Mm. Well, there's the spiritual imagery about like the turtle that withdraws its shells, that and that going inward that I correlated with depression also does seem to relate to the artistic process and to excavation. And like, my experience of depression more and more is that it does allow for discovery and also for clearing away. Like excavation, there's two sides to it. One is you're actually clearing away a bunch of stuff, rubble or dirt or crust or whatever it is, and the other is that by doing that you're discovering that. And there's a model of depression by this guy Dabrowski, which I haven't read hardly, and I haven't read anything of him. I've just read stuff online, just summing it up. But he defines depression as positive disintegration. So it relates to these internal structures we have of social conditioning, belief, identity, and how, as and when they start coming apart, we experience that as depression, like a loss of meaning and purpose and all the rest of it, and even physical kind of lethargy and despair is obviously a big word for it, but that allows for a clearing out of all those old structures, and we become more and more spacious the more that disintegration happens,
which is all positive. And yeah, we see it. I think it's all, and I think last time we talked a little bit about being like known or known in the world in terms of music. And if you think how the media often manipulates things, or, you know, decides who's in and who's out, it's almost the thing that's decided that depression's actually a bad thing.
Yeah, totally.
And I think the way you described it, it's like expansiveness, seeing new ideas, answers to things. These are all things. It's just something you can't sell. You know, the internal is the anti-consumer is the is the death of capitalism. I've been reading, we talked about a little bit the book The Gift, and I've been reading about that, as we have this gift, and certainly self-discovery or clearing out, allows, I think, that the gift from the other side, or however we want to define it, in, and then that's, you become kind of vehicle for that.
Yeah.
So kind of that winding around down until you find like this moment where like a drop of water or something comes in. So
I think you and I, we're very different creative expressions. I've done music, but generally that's not my métier. And for me, I'm noticing, or thinking just now anyway, but I have been noticing it too, is that a lot of what I do creatively, or however you want to describe that in terms of output, seems to be almost a pretext for me to go into places in my own psyche that I wouldn't go otherwise. Like, I wouldn't just go for my own desire to become whole, even though that's a very powerful desire. We're just kind of hardwired or programmed or conditioned to stay away from the painful stuff in our past and in our psyches. But when I get driven by some creative interest, let's say, or personal obsession with how it looks to people on the outside, and I really want to explore it and express it and communicate it in some way, that means I have to go deeper and deeper into it to find what it is. And then I end up, this happens every time lately, I end up going into areas of my own past and my own psyche that I didn't know were there, and I really didn't want to know were there. And that's very fruitful for me, and then the product itself is more interesting because of it. But it really does seem that's not the gift. I mean, it's not about actually going in there and excavating some gold and bringing it out and having currency. It's about, that's kind of what lures me into the mine or into the cave or whatever, but it's actually being in there, being in the depths and the dark, is the real treasure, not what I'm bringing forth from it.
Right. If you feel it as a, I guess if you feel like, it sounds like what you're describing, you feel like there's success, there's however you want to describe it, pleasure to success, or to me it's always really exciting to, as this song takes shape and the words kind of come take shape, and it's not, it's not the end product, it's not any part of it, but I have found that the song then provides an access to it by just performing it, singing it later. So it has, it kind of maintains that thing, and maybe it wears off after time, but a lot of them can just transform you right back to that place.
Right, yeah. So yeah, then it's like it's you're connected to that place where you found the thing that you brought out.
But, exactly.
Yeah.
Which I think is really, lovely. I think that's the currency. I think we used that word last time, the currency, these strange currency like likes or something. But that to me is the powerful currency, is just being is participating in that. And I haven't done my, fair share of analyzing what that is or why. It just has been endlessly fascinating.
So for me, I have this very strong motivation. Like, have you read much of my writing? I know you retweet my blog posts and stuff, but have you read much of?
I haven't read your book. I have just been listening to the podcast.
So you haven't read the blog posts about Whitley Strieber or about my Occult Yorkshire and Jimmy Savile or any of that stuff?
No, I haven't. I've just been kind of starting by just listening.
Right.
Eavesdropping. So.
Yeah. You get a lot in that. And as you're saying, it's kind of not in the words anyway, but whatever's sort of embedded in those words. So.
Right.
But in terms of actually what my focus is, I mean, primarily I'm a writer, it seems. So I focus on these particular subjects in these particular areas of deception, let's say, of manipulation, of control, of social engineering, all of this stuff. And I'm very driven. Like, I've just written a piece about Whitley Strieber, another book he's written, The Supernatural, and it's really it's really an attack disguised as a review. Like I'm attacking what I see as a distortion of the truth that's going on out there in the world, and I recognize that I'm driven by something in my past, that I grew up in an environment in which the truth was concealed, and in which there were dangerous, destructive elements that were threatening to me and that I wasn't allowed to talk about, and so on and so forth. I got this pattern embedded in me, and so I'm trying to work that out in the present. But what I'm getting at is that I'm aware of this drive I have, which is to somehow fix something, to challenge and confront something, to set the record straight, etc., etc. And I'm wondering if you have anything like that, like you, not as in similar, but equivalent, like if you have some sort of conscious drive in you that that gives you satisfaction besides just being, you know, expressive. Like,
right, to set the record straight.
Well, not like necessarily equivalent to that, but something similar.
I sometimes feel like it's a counterbalance.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in a baby, I did not say, so it wouldn't be so precise as to set a record straight, but it would balance what seems so much falsely motivated and falsely spoken and, you know, falsely felt, like fake emotional stuff that the arts have quickly become. I think anytime there's one breakthrough, then there's, you know, nine imitators and stuff like that. So to make something that felt, that was weighted or just, you know, that was, had its own integrity, no matter where it ended up, it's so often so private. It's so often so, you know, rarely leaves the room, so much of it, you know.
Literally, you mean?
Yeah, literally. Yeah, so again, and what does that mean? And I think to more and more, I just like, which allows it again to not be despair, is more like that work, to work into the voice in the wilderness or whatever that, you know, that phrase was. But so yeah, so it doesn't, I guess a counterbalance would be my closest definition to what you were saying in terms of uncovering, you know, false narratives or stuff.
So are there elements in your environment and in your culture then that trigger you or provoke you or inspire you to do that, to try and balance it out or correct it?
Yeah, I think it would just be just the radio so often does. You turn on the people's radio,
mm-hmm.
as we call it, and just so much of it, there's a rings false that you just want to kind of go back and, you know, make a song that feels true to that. I don't know, the vibrations or the resonance. I'm not exactly sure. I don't. This is the first time to even try to define, you know, to try to define this project that's been going on for me for like 30 or more than 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So
how did it begin then? Presumably in the privacy of your own bedroom.
Yeah, making songs and stuff. It kind of began with that, and I started playing music at an early age and was really, really just moved by it. I think that one of my earliest memories would be like fourth grade when we began the, you know, playing the brass in school band. And
what did you play?
I played trumpet.
Oh, did you mention that already?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I might have mentioned the trumpet, but
I think you did, because I remember saying to somebody anyway that I wanted to play a trumpet when I was a kid, and I don't know why.
Did you get to play?
No, I never even got to hold a trumpet.
Wow. Yeah, so my cousin left me a trumpet, and then I brought it to school, but I just have this strong memory. We went from everyone playing like these little scales to, you know, playing a harmony, and really just running down the hallways ecstatic from that harmony. And I think the harmony in terms of, there's a harmony when you're, you know, you have a melody, there's always a harmony to it, whether it's, to me, it's like the arranging the song or the words to the song. There's that same experience, and I haven't, again, I'm kind of on the spot. I've never really defined this stuff.
Mm.
And yet I've kind of always done it and always wanted to do it. And I've actually kind of struggled with doing anything else. you know, to try to make a living, make my.
Right. You mean you haven't been able to redirect that energy into anything else?
Yeah, so I'm always doing odd jobs, and I struggle just trying, like, my goal over the last 3 weeks was just not to quit.
Right.
Not to quit my job and end up in more, you know, financial stress than I'm already in.
We just bought a business. It's a what they call thrift store here, second hand store.
Where are you?
It's a small town in British Columbia.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and this we're just on the edge of not bankruptcy, but just running out of money, and got mortgage and well, I was going to say things like that, but basically just a mortgage and very little coming in, a few donations to the podcast, and my wife had a 2 day a week job in a used bookstore, and so it's like, what are we going to do? We really didn't know, and we've known for like a year that or more that we're going to reach that point where we wouldn't actually be able to support ourselves, and I can't, like you, I can't or I won't redirect that energy into, I can't legally work here anyway, but I could try other stuff online. But so much of my energy goes into this productivity and so much enjoyment in it that I simply haven't even thought about redirecting that energy, and have just kind of trusted that something would come along, or that this would work itself out, and then this thing came along, and so now I work in I wasn't going to make this too, you know, what, publicly known, because I don't want to get stalked but anyway, I don't think it's very likely, but yeah, I work in a second hand shop, own it, don't own the property, but own the business, and it's actually really, I mean, it's only been a week, but it's really, really satisfying work. Just the whole, all of the variables, it turns out, really suited to my nature, like dealing with secondhand stuff, the kind of intimacy of that, but also the sort of the fact that we're recycling, that we're not just bringing new products into the world, but redistributing stuff that exists. That's very satisfying to me. Meeting people in a context that's very safe, like really clearly defined, so I'm able to have these quite meaningful interactions with strangers, which I've never been able to have. There's all kinds of elements that like just fit right into place and feel like this is actually what I most needed at this time in my life, and yet it's also we're now generating income, so it's kind of a little I don't want to use the word miracle because I don't like words that big things up, but just a really, just a beautiful development that we didn't do anything at all to bring about except live our lives, you know, and kind of generate the opportunity that arose. But anyway, that was just an anecdote,
well,
I guess.
That'll ultimately inform what you're doing as opposed to take away from it,
yeah,
right?
Completely, yeah. It seems to be part of the continuum of what I am doing, actually.
I think that might be the grounding. I think that might be the life giving, like where the roots go in to keep the thing alive. I think one of the things that we kind of, at least, you know, as musicians or artists, often end up talking about is how someone kind of rises up, you know, and then creates this large income and then lose touch, or they're like, why aren't they good anymore? You know, so that kind of thing. And so in a sense, the job kind of plugs us into what actually keeps it alive, even though you might, for myself, struggle with just resenting it or wishing I wasn't there.
Yeah, and I think I've noticed this with spiritual teachers too. I think if you start to generate income through doing the thing that you're good at doing, like you were saying, in your own way, but even it doesn't even entail a great deal of success, but just having the correlation between doing that thing and generating income, I think is really compromises it. It puts too much weight or strain on the thing itself, because there's part of what I do creatively, again that word I'd rather not use, but anyway, productively, is to validate myself. I am doing it partly to validate myself, to feel like I'm real, and so then if I add the thing about I've got to make money doing it, which of course money is just a primary social validator for all of us, then that really just puts so much strain on the whole process. So to be able to, for something organically to just grow out of everything I'm doing that really is just about, well, it's not just about money because it's about connecting to the community. So it's actually sprouting these extra things, but essentially we only did it to make money, and it's purely like rendering unto Caesar kind of thing. That just seems so much more, healthy or safe or whatever the right word is there, in terms of continuing my productivity without shackling it to a financial agenda.
I think that again, back to the book The Gift, the older cultures really separated. If you go back to the older tribe eras and stuff, people didn't sell food had to be given,
right?
And they created these elaborate networks of giving stuff away. And so I'm just reading a chapter about usury, money, you know, making money with money, which originally was never done within, you know, the tribe.
Right.
And so it allowed you to create, you were able to make money off from strangers. So it's almost like in a similar, we both similarly way keep the music like within the tribe, and then the other interactions are with quote-unquote strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And the familiar, you create this whole network by doing it, you know, and passing it on and doing it just for itself.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's an illusion that it empowers it, or maybe it's an actual thing, or maybe that's just what the study is to see.
Well, doesn't it come back to what we were talking about to begin with, that really it's not about bringing forth something of value, it's about going to where what is of value is, going to it, rather than trying to bring it to oneself. So, like, being creative isn't about creating an output. It's not even being creative, it's discovering the source of creativity that is in us and that is creating us, I suppose. I mean, I don't want to get too fanciful there, but I mean, you were touching on it earlier, where you were saying that I can't remember what you were saying now, but that the thing that you couldn't identify, I can't remember that at all, the phrase or the terms that you were using, but it brought to mind an experience I had very recently while I was asleep, which was of something moving into my awareness that I realized was I don't know how to put this into words, but it was like what was really living this life was moving in, and who I thought I was being gently moved out. And so there was something that I did not recognize as myself that actually was moving into the space that my mind had occupied and taking over my life. And it was a wonderful feeling. It wasn't frightening. It was very extremely strange, because it was almost like waking up as somebody else. It was like, as kind of depicted in myths and sci-fi stories, you wake up and realize that you're somebody else, that this life is a dream, or that's been depicted in kind of overly literal terms. But it was something like that, that there is something that is just waiting to move in and live this life if we just clear out enough of that debris to
Right.
let it.
Right, or to pass through, or to be kind of instrument to it. I know, I think the process for my end of it has been fine. You know, you don't know what someone else hears or what someone else, you know, they're almost like to say like a product kind of gives it this kind of three-dimensional thing that you pass on, whereas it's more, again, the process might be what it is. You know, you're always kind of discovering it. It doesn't have, it's not finished.
I think it's there's something about heralding, which like the threshold back to the doorway is something
Right.
that's coming through this space. When you're talking about trumpet, this might be kind of fanciful, but we did end our last conversation about Lucifer. Trumpet to me now is associated with Gabriel, you know, the archangel Gabriel, who blows the trumpet at the end of the world.
Right.
And
Or trombone if you're in Germany. Which is another interesting thing to look at how translation, but that's a, I don't want to derail that your comment, but
oh, yeah, I thought, yeah.
it has different, that we have different, you know, words for seeing
So, what you
the
mean
same
in the
thing.
Bible in Germany? It's Gabriel,
It got translated as
but.
trombone, which made me think there was this kind of fluidity. There wasn't an actual image. What it, you know, it's one of the, I mean, it's still a brass instrument, but it's not that far
Right.
off.
Well, so.
Right, how things, how we hear words and how we, you know, interpret them or sing, but
Well, particularly in that context, because it's a vision of something that's non-physical or indescribable anyway, and the basic idea seems to be that there's this powerful force that is sending a signal, a musical note that is a signal to humanity, or to the whatever that is, you know, to the mind even, that it's over, you know, that there's a new reality in town.
Yeah.
And I am a god. Like I was saying about music, like everything is really could be experienced as music because of the implicate order of sound, let's say. But we have to select and emphasize and whatnot to create something we can experience as music. The same is true of life, is that everything is part of a very intricately structured narrative, but we don't experience it that way. We experience it as chaotic and random, and only some incidents are significant, and so then we select those incidents throughout the day and throughout our lives, and that becomes the narrative of who we are. So it's like an identity narrative. I am this person, all these incidents and experiences and likes and dislikes make up who I am. When in fact we've just emphasized a really small bandwidth of the total experience.
Exactly, and we talked. I mean, listening to other episodes where you talk about memories that are blocked, you know, and so you have something that you might have happened, but you can't remember it,
yeah.
And then you have something that you know triggers the way you feel about something, like, and that's like kind of an echo or a shadow. It places a shadow in you, but you don't know what it actually is causing the shadow.
Yeah.
And I think going back to the very beginning, that whole going inward is just to go, I mean, if you like the work, if you enjoy the work, you go in and you poke around and you come out with a song. I always feel pretty happy to come out, you know, with a song, and it's, you know, it's something to sing again at a show. I kind of, the ones that stay with me, you know, I just really enjoy. And I don't really think about what they're saying, in a sense. They often, you know, say a few things.
Do you always enjoy the going in process?
I do. In fact, I enjoy it. I realized recently that I don't really have to come out, like you were talking about, like with, in terms of like treasure or stuff like that. I don't always feel now that I have to come out with something.
Right.
So it's kind of given me a little peace of mind. It's like, well, I'm going in. We better bring home a song, you know, or the family will starve. But now it's like, there's enough of them. There's plenty to sing. You know, we could do a couple hours of them. And, so now it's more like going in. No, it really makes for a bit. At the meantime, I got to make some soup tonight. And it was making. I went to this astrologer.
Oh.
And he kept saying to me, "You like to make soup." He's like, and I literally had been that day. I was mixing a song. I was working in my studio, and I did have soup on the stove, and I was pretty excited about that. And I don't know where he got that, but he kept saying, "You like to make soup. You like to make soup, and you're writing a song, and you're making soup."
Yeah.
He kept saying it over and over. And I was like, well, you'd hit that on the head. And so I always go to those astrologers wondering where the money is. I'm always like, well, just, I'm not too interested in what it's about or some spiritual experience. I'm just looking for the money.
Uh-huh.
That's where my honest place is with those, you know, kind of things, or the therapists. And it's interesting because, again, listening to the other podcasts and the, you know, a tradition of coming from money to people that came from people that were, you know, born into houses of stress of how you're going to pay the bills and, you know, no money for shoes or, you know, not that poverty, but not the fancy kind of shoes that you wanted. But there's money for, you know, the off-brand of Levi's or the off-brand of shoes. But, I mean, to think that that's the solution, that having the cash will just change, you know, nothing will change. And, you know, you talked earlier in the narrative how you change one element and nothing else will change.
Right.
So the purse of the picture is, well, I'll just add the cash and then everything else will be the same. They don't see how that, you know, is like throwing a giant thing into the life raft and it tips it over or something like that.
Yeah, well, they say that it's very common, people who win the lottery and their life goes to hell.
Yeah, most of them lose it pretty quickly. But we were, you know, I was talking to someone, just doing an artist at a show. You know, he's 88 now and he's lived this long life and had, you know, a number of wives and stuff. But I remember hearing from someone, you know, he married the daughter of the guy who owns Nestle, you know, as if he had just like hit the lottery and won the jackpot. You know, it's like, now you could just cruise the world and paint, you know, as if everything was fixed, you know.
So you go to astrologers hoping that they will tell you what the thing you need to do is to fix the money situation? Or?
Exactly. Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, it's...
So, and have they been helpful in some
way? You know, they always say, you know, when Jupiter aligns with this, this will happen. You know,
so. Oh, so it's future-oriented.
It's future-oriented, exactly.
Because I don't generally... Well, I'm not an astrologer, but I use it a little bit, and I certainly check my transit. So I like to know what's going on planetarily in terms of, yeah, what it bodes. But in terms of something like that, I would be more inclined to go the existential detective route, which is what is it in your psyche that, and that you can do that astrologically too, you know, what's in your original birth chart that represents that problem with money, and then go deeper into that, like, because it will also represent other things, whatever it is, whether you have a hard aspected Saturn or an unaspected Jupiter or whatever it is in your actual inherent makeup, psychological astrological makeup that represents misfortune, financial misfortune.
Right.
That will also represent other things, and that will relate to your past, and not just, I mean, you've zeroed in on one major thing, which is just growing up constantly needing money, and so that's just a very charged area for you anyway. But there'll be other ways in which, like for me, money represented, privilege obviously and entitlement, but it also represented the love I didn't get from my father, and so money for me was always tainted. There was something polluted about it because it was a buy-off. I felt like I was bought off by my father at some level, like, here, take the money and don't expect me to love you. And so I've basically always shunned money, and that might be in my chart, but that's also in my psychological formation, you know, my relationship with my father. So there's probably something like that in you where you have a psychological pattern around money whereby you somehow can't, you repulse it in some way, or you avoid doing whatever it is that you would need to do in order to get it because of associations that it has.
Well, it'd be like, it's the same thing if you're, you know, they have the father, but you also have like the muse. And if you, you know, if the muse just hands you a bunch of cash and you want the, you know, you want the music, you know, you feel bought off as well. It's like, well, here's a bunch of cash. And so there's a sense that if you're operating outside of money, again, we go back to that thing of the gift. You're operating outside of money. Maybe you operate and assume or to say that it's more pure or it's more purely motivated.
Right, so then you've got the
Whether that's true.
stereotype of the struggling artist eventually. The fact that
Exactly.
you can't support yourself is kind of evidence of your integrity.
Yeah, exactly. Which I don't think it is.
Not necessarily, no. I mean, it's just because statistically that tends to be true, and that rich artists aren't very good, or rich people aren't artists, and so on. Those are just statistics, right? I mean, poor people generally aren't artists either, so.
Right. I mean, artists sometimes, it's just, it's kind of in that kind of crucible of the moment, whether it's, I think it could come from either end. You know, someone struggling with the idea of wealth and they struggle and they towards, you know, you, I guess you figure out where you are and where you're trying to go and you map that out.
Yeah, and what does money represent really is the thing. I mean, it represents something collectively, but then also individually. And although, yes, it's necessary at a purely physical level, practical level, it's also, we also have emotional, psychological issues around it, whereby we need it or we don't want it or whatever it is, and all of those are tied up in this fundamental idea of value that you're also touching on, like what is it that gives us value? How is it that we are valued, and how is it that we are perceived as having value? All of that. That's such a major thing for the ego anyway.
Yeah, we talked about that last time. It was how do you just declare that you have value? Could be, you know, number one on the charts, or is it people because you got a lot of cash, or someone gave you cash, or someone told you it meant something to, you know, meant something to them? Or is it, again, that whole thing of because it was outside of the realm of cash or capital, it was pure and you felt the, you know, that purity. I think the two end up being completely separate in the end.
The
You know,
two,
someone, whether someone loves someone or not, the
yeah.
fact that they gave them cash actually doesn't change it one bit.
Well, I think that we're essentially alone in this question of value, and like the only sense of value that we can that will ever really validate us is going to come from us,
Right.
and not from our minds or our hearts even, but from the soul. You know, what has value is what can determine value, and what the part of us that can say this has value and this does not have value, that seems to be the part that we've lost touch with. And paradoxically, and this seems to feel like a sort of dog chasing my tail with this one, but that itself is what is has value, is that part in us that can determine is this a value to me or not. So like in your analogy, or our analogy of the cave, saying about how you don't necessarily have to go in, down and in to bring something back, it struck me that that's potentially a kind of liberation, the more complete that becomes, because it may be that we're not supposed to come out, like that inner journey is supposed to just continue rather than going in for a while and coming back out and then going back in again. And part of what our reason or excuse for coming out instead of going deeper and deeper is, oh, look what I found, I'm going to bring this back and show it to the world and get something for it. So the more we let go of that, and the more we're just able to go inward, the more we can keep going, keep going, you know, and ignore the prizes and the treasures that we
Or
see there.
proof that you
Yeah,
can
the proof, right.
prove it to me. You prove to you did this work. I know. I think that's right. I think it's nice to say the part that recognizes value is that's it. That's the value. And I think that then, I think if you could really, for me, I think as I get stronger or feel more confident to just do that, that's inseparable from whether the song proves it or not. And or, I mean, the songs are something, again, that they're vehicles in a sense that you have them. You know, some days are I think on Earth, you're always going to go in and out. I mean, I think dying might be the experience of going in and staying in, but living is the experience of going in and out kind of constantly, day and night. So I think there's the going in, and then there's the singing the song, which is kind of more outward, or blowing the trumpet, heralding.
Right.
Okay, that's better.
La, 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 la. La 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 la.
Fuck you, America, for being so full of lies, for being biggest and baddest of everything that is violent, destructive, and fearful about humanity. I pledge to crush you with beauty, song, and dance, and the wonderful beating of my living heart, baby.
Hear my fluttering, one song of the other, who dares to make no difference. Over and over, I'll be your butterfly, floating on the sea. Won't you run away with me? Now 25,000 hungry march on Bunker Hill to complicate the masters and liberate the still. Waiting on the brave, waiting on the free. Won't you run away with me? La 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 la. 'Twas a red, white, and blue day, with everything complete. The houses, the churches, the middle of the street. But we couldn't eat your kingdom or your slavery. Won't you run away? Won't you run away? Won't you run away with me? La 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 la. La 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 la. And freedom was a fable, and fate got so pissed off at us, I hid beneath the table, and I flew out of your whispers and your misery. Won't you run away with me? La 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 la. Was caught without his pants and was stomped to death by song and dance. You told me this was my land, and so I did believe. Won't you run away? Won't you run away? Won't you run away? La 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 la. La 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 la. All our traces, and wipes out all our footprints, and blows off all our faces. And I'm blind, sister, blind. Now everything's in my mind. Won't you run away with me? La 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 la. Dares to make no difference over and 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 over.
I think Gabriel's in. Did you read the Satanic Verses?
I didn't, no.
Well, you with London and Satan. I don't know. It's hard to see what you skipped. It was actually a great book. But,
oh, yeah.
He wrestles with Gabriel in his sleep. This Indian Bollywood actor at night, every night wrestles with Gabriel until he doesn't really want to go to sleep anymore.
Oh.
That's just a little bit of it. But the Gabriel is this. When you said that, it kind of—that's the first thing I think of—is him. His name is Gabriel too, so they kind of there's the one from a long time ago and the one now, at night meeting every night. So.
Right.
That was a little side confusion. That was a tangential.
Maybe I think that the Gabriel thing was on the edges of my attention. For a while in this conversation, because it also correlates with the thing I was saying that I feel, and I was asking you about, like I feel driven to blow the trumpet. That's the break, to bust the narrative, right? That is this thing I've had since I was young. I wanted to be Gabriel. I don't know if I knew the trumpet was back then, but to something, at some level, I think I would have known and somehow associated playing a trumpet with blowing the whistle, being a whistleblower, right? And that's a very basic desire. I mean, I think anyone who's going inward to explore and excavate their own souls, however that is, you know, however we describe that, is driven by that, a similar kind of thing to the whistleblower. We want to break open the cover-up that actually conceals the truth from ourselves of who we are and why we're here. Which is a big thing, but it's, you know.
So that's a trumpet. That playing is it. You know, that's what I'm saying. I guess that's where we kind of what a song was. The song. It is the song, the declaration, or is it about the declaration, or is it, you know, the evidence, what you came back with, or just the actual thing? You come back, and you play the horn. But I think, but now I'm starting to think you do both. You don't. There is neither. There's the in and out. I think maybe that's more of it than just saying, well, you're just in and then you bring something out to declare it. I think you just go in and you go
out. I think you go in and out and not, it's not to bring anything. I think that's maybe the how you reconcile that, because I think the desire to prove, as you put it, means we come out prematurely. Whereas there is a natural cycle, I think you're right, that we go in for a certain time and then we come out. And as we come out, we will bring it, light bringer, it's Lucifer again. But we're not coming out in order to bring it.
Right, right. I think that's, again, that checks, I think when you commented on some of the integrity of artists who either just paint it that way or actually do it, that's the kind of policing we do on ourselves. We're going in. Are we just coming out to prove it, or are we coming out as this thing, you know, birthing this thing, letting this thing out?
Right.
Letting it out.
Yeah.
Or just experiencing it in the way that this is. This is how we experience it, or how we like to. I think when someone's doing what they love, that's the kind of thing, whether it's writing it or painting or drawing, you know, we do that.
Yeah, that would be the vulnerability as well, because it would be, sometimes it might actually also be not coming out when it's time to come out because we don't feel we've got enough to prove it. So then we delay the coming out because it's so vulnerable and exposing. If you come out with just a little piffle, just a little bit, well, it seems like it to you.
It looks so much bigger on the inside. Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good point. Or just bringing it out. Is that all there is? You know, like the song.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I know it's fascinating. I think it seems endless.
This conversation.
Yeah. No, I mean that process, I think it does. I mean, and going in and out. Yeah, I think the conversation and joy, you know, I was, you know, a podcast is just sharing a conversation.
Yeah, I was just thinking, realizing then that it's kind of in miniature what we're talking about, because going in and out is a bit like listening and speaking.
Yeah, exactly. Dialogue, you could call it dialogue. Mm. Day and night too, which is all those things, that kind of pulsing.
Yeah, it's very sexual too, of course.
Yeah, the that's what the book I'm reading, The Gift, is the erotic nature of I don't know, what is it, I got the book here, of property, how you're drawn to it. We're drawn to, I mean, the fact that you're drawn to go inward would be that very thing. If you decide that as attraction.
Right, yeah. Push and pull.
Exactly. I mean, I teach for years, I didn't do it this year, I taught a Shakespeare class to high school kids that had been kind of removed from the regular high school system. So it was really interesting, and it was really fun to do, and they didn't really read at high school level, but they, to talk about, you know, this, it kind of ended up being this kind of thing that another teacher invited me to do, and I didn't really know much about Shakespeare, the plays, to begin with, but one of the things that you constantly see teaching is that everything is push and pull, this pulsing kind of constantly. It's kind of throbbing.
In the plays of Shakespeare?
Yeah. We just dealt with Romeo and Juliet, but I'm saying the language, the poetry, the thing just is like push-pull constantly.
Right.
It really kind of just, it explodes on that level. And it doesn't really, I think that's another thing, you go there and it's not really a lot of self, oh, maybe the, I don't know, to speak too quickly, but I mean that it kind of does that without questioning anything else. Like a dance, it's like a dancer. It's like, you know, it doesn't have to question whether that's a valid thing. It just enjoys it. It enjoys that process.
What's the it here?
What the dancing, the act.
So you're talking about it in everything.
That's pulsing.
Yeah, the pulsing in everything.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think I was saying it didn't. The writer doesn't. It just enjoy. It's like this kind of massive enjoyment of that, you know, and sharing. I think we talk about go. We started off our conversation. You go in to write, but it's like if you were to say, "And I go in and out, and I just love it, and that's what I want to do."
Yeah.
That kind of thing. That kind of pure. Pure, you know, pure ecstatic behavior. To be human is to do this.
That's great. I think we've hit on a unified field theory of creativity.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there you go. Which is a pulsing or, you know, thing. I think so too. I think I do. I feel like now I can get back to work. Like, yes. Yes and yes. Well, it's nice to chat with you again.
Yeah.
I look forward to reading. I have to admit that I didn't feel qualified to read at first, but now that I spend more time listening, you know, I'm like intrigued to read.
I'll be intrigued if you do read, because you know, my worldview is unconventional, to say the least, and probably it's perhaps more obviously so in the writing, although maybe not, I don't know. But anyway, certainly a lot of the material there is strange to many, so I'll be curious if it does interest
you. Yeah, I will, and I'll let you know. Because I think it actually doesn't seem all that unconventional. It seems very familiar to me.
Oh, that's probably because we're of the Gabriel tribe.
On that note...
Yeah.
Monkey said to man, I want your fireman. Said to monkey, I want your brain. Monkey said to man, my desire is to be like the mankind. And this was all the monkey said when this world come tumbling down.
Monkey said to man, I want your fireman. Said to monkey, I want your brain. Monkey said to man, my desire is to be like the mankind. And this was all the monkey spoke when his word came tumbling down. Here comes the monkey, and monkey speaks his mind. Oh, here comes the monkey, and monkey speaks his mind. Oh, here comes the monkey. Speaks his mind. And this was all that monkey spoke when his word came tumbling down.
La fille dans la jungle sec.